This is the Green Desk on 95 BFM.
This week on the Green Desk, we're keeping it kakariki green. Jack Marshall chats with Greens co-leader and climate change minister James Shaw. Public consultation on the net zero carbon bill is coming to an end, and so he asked Minister Shaw what this bill is going to look like.
Kind of looking at this policy, I've just sat my public policy exam and I'm averaging about a kind of C plus, B minus kind of thing. So I feel like I have a decent understanding of public policy.
But let me see if I can boost it up to an A minus.
But so for like a lot of the public, I think we kind of forget this definitely in the kind of policy and kind of government world, is that for a lot of people, this it kind of sounds a bit like gobbledygook when we talk about, you know, yeah, political kind of like the wonky stuff. So I was thinking, in your own words, would you be able to really talk about what this bill is and what you're kind of trying to get from the public?
Yeah, sure. Well, I mean, first of all, responding to that, I mean, that's definitely the case. And the Zero Carbon Bill is a very kind of high-level overarching piece of legislation which is designed to create certainty over the course of the next 30 years about the direction of travel for the economy as a whole. And that means that we'll be able to be making some big investment decisions with a lot more clarity than we've been able to in the past. You know, it's been really interesting. I think I've done six of the consultation meetings around the country so far. And, you know, in order to kind of comprehend how this works, you know, we end up talking about things that don't directly relate to the bill, but which are relevant, right? So we're talking a lot about the transition towards electric vehicles, or we're talking a lot about, you know, animal methane and what role that plays in our greenhouse gas emissions and, you know, what it means for farmers and, you know, all of that kind of stuff. So I totally understand why people sort of struggle with this stuff. They kind of need to be able to relate to it through the kind of outcomes and ways that affect their lives and their work. That's totally cool, right? That means that, you know, when we're having these workshops, we're able to talk about a pretty broad range of things. That the Zero Carbon Act kind of tries to create the context for all of those things.
It's like it's kind of aiming to shape the structure that we kind of operate in so that we automatically head in a certain direction rather than, I don't know, yeah, forcing anyone to do anything.
That's right. I mean, at one level, it's quite a simple bill. At one level, it's complicated at other levels when you get to the detail. But, you know, what it does is it puts in law the target of a net zero emissions economy by the year 2050 and defines what that means. It sets up a new institution, a politically independent climate change commission, to help guide us there and offer advice and guidance to the government, and a series of interim stepping stone budgets sort of every 5 or 6 years between now and the year 2050. And it also sort of creates a sort of a requirement for the government to have a plan for how we adapt to the effects of climate change, like increased floods and fires and droughts, sea level rise, that kind of stuff. So that's basically it, right? Now, it does get more complicated when you get into each of those things, but that's the kind of design of the bill. And it is designed to create certainty. So the idea is that when you know what the target is and you have a sense of what the downward curve on our emissions is going to be over the course of the next 30 years, if you're a business, you're then able to start making some big investment calls with some real clarity, right, about, you know, what's going to work within that kind of limit and what's outside of it.
And then just on that target we're talking about, so 2050, we're going to have a target for emissions. So more or less, we've got three options coming up. We've got one, which is just focusing on carbon dioxide, which is like the transport sector and things. Then we've got, yeah, B, which is those same kind of carbon dioxide gases. And then we're stabilizing the methane from, you know, livestock. And then finally C, we've got the net zero emissions, which is kind of the big tall order where we're going methane's everything. Just so that's the kind of, I think C is the one we want to choose, but is it really politically feasible? Because for context, just for the listeners, we're talking about, you know, disrupting New Zealand's biggest export. You know, it's huge to actually like try and put that into political power.
Yeah, Well, the difference between option B and C, because when you say disrupting our largest industry, actually, if you don't include methane at all, right? If for example you did the carbon dioxide only, then what you're saying is you're actually disrupting every other part of the economy, but not one. So you're picking one kind of part of the economy over the other. So there's actually a spectrum. Really, I mean, for the sake of simplicity, we've presented it as options. And option B, which is, like you say, a kind of a stabilised flow of methane, and option C, which is net zero across all gases, you can actually, within the all gases target, you can still have a level of methane flow. It just gets very wonky very quickly. Yeah. But you choose to offset it. Right, so you're offset because you can actually still have. This is why we call it net zero, because it's not actually absolute zero. You're not getting everything down, so you're not emitting anything. You're just getting your levels of pollution down, and then you're offsetting the remainder through tree planting or other means. Whereas option B, you're saying, well, we aim to get everything down as low as we can, but then there's a level of the methane flow that we choose not to offset, and then there's a spectrum. Like, you know, you could choose to offset some but not all, you could choose to offset all, which is your net zero target, and so on. So I think that there's a range there, but the reason why we presented it the way that we have is because we want to kind of get a sense of how people think about it, you know, and kind of what the appetite for New Zealanders is, and so that, you know, that's essentially the phase that we're in at the moment with these public consultations.
Mm. What has the agricultural industry's reaction been so far?
Well, it's actually very muted, and I think things have really changed a great deal in the last kind of 10 to 20 years. You know, if you went back sort of about 15 years or so, you know, when people were driving tractors up the steps of Parliament and all this kind of stuff, you know, there's none of that now. I think the vast majority of the farming community recognise, you know, there is an issue that needs to be grappled with. Most of them are sort of saying, well, you know, it's actually about how you account for methane emissions, not that they don't cause any damage, which is, you know, so that debate's moved on. And then not just how you account for them, but can you give farmers credit for all the really good stuff that they do on the farm that helps to offset that, you know, such as riparian planting and so on. So we're kind of working with kind of the big agricultural sector organisations like Dairy NZ and Beef and Lamb and others to kind of work through that. But it's a much more constructive dialogue than it's ever been at any point in history. And I think that's the thing not a lot of people kind of realise, is that actually everyone's a bit sort of traumatised by the way that the debate went 10 years ago and think that's automatically how it's going to go this time. Actually, things have moved on significantly.
Because it's my understanding that it's more than anyone, it's farmers who are actually really driving the conversation, or maybe not driving the conversation, but definitely doing the work themselves. There's like companies like Happy Cow and things out there that are really embracing these kind of green technologies and moving the industry forward.
Yeah, there is this kind of younger generation of farmers coming through, you know, people in their kind of, you know, mid to late 30s and 40s. Who are experimenting with all sorts of amazing stuff. You know, and I've done kind of a dozen farm visits up and down the country, and no two of them are the same. They're all doing different things, and it's one of the things that they've said to us is, look, if this goes the way we think it might go, which is if agriculture was to join the emissions trading scheme, then they really want to make sure that it's organised in such a way that gives farmers the maximum control over what they do on their farm to kind of net things out. And I think that's a very reasonable request to make. Like, why would you impose a cost on someone but don't give them the tools to be able to fix it themselves? And that, you know, when that kind of works, if it works, then that really drives innovation and investment and so on. I think you get a virtuous circle.
That was The Green Desk on 95 BFM. Tihe Modi Order.
Jack Marshall wanted me to pass on that